Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject is breathing. And yeah, there's a lot to say about breathing. Breathing is not something that we should take for granted, because optimal breathing can dramatically improve our health and our psyches and extend our longevity. So with us today is Betsy Thomason. Betsy is a respiratory therapist. She's also author of a book that's about to come out, which is Just Breathe Out, Developing a User-Friendly Body, featuring the Breathe Out Dynamic System. She works at a physical therapy practice in New Jersey, actually a respiratory therapy practice in Whippany, New Jersey. She's senior therapist there, but she also has her private practice. Tell us about your private practice, Betsy, and what types of patients are eligible for that?
I treat anyone who is breathing and who recognizes the need or recognizes the benefits of learning to breathe and effectively. And people have to be ready to participate in their own healing, because I can't heal them. I can help them to learn how to heal themselves. So I see people who have dysfunction, but I also train trainers, and they might be healthcare professionals, they might be athletes, they might be anyone who jumps on board and says, wow, I want to learn this and I want to make it part of my life. Because this is how I learned it. I learned it from a fabulous, imaginative man named Ian Jackson, who's no longer with us. But he developed, when he developed it in the 1960s, he called it breath play. It's no longer called breath play. I won't go into the details about that, but it's now called the Breathe Out Dynamic System. And when I met him, I learned it actually because I was a New York State licensed wilderness guide for 20 years. I was running trips for women to help them develop personal strength through outdoor activities. And I was guiding them up mountains in the Adirondacks and locally in Harriman and parks in New Jersey. And I met a woman named Ann Mavro Mattis, who's an occupational therapist and a hiker. And she taught us how to breathe effectively to get up mountains without huffing and puffing. Unfortunately, Ann died in 1987 of breast cancer, and she asked me to carry on her work as a breathing trainer.
Well, this is a good segue to a discussion of breathing when it comes to athletic performance. You know, I'm an inveterate triathlete. I cycle and run and swim, and, you know, I'm in the weight room, and breathing is really a very, very important part of optimal athletic performance. So how does it fit in?
Well, it starts actually with, at the very beginning of learning the Breathe Out Dynamic System, and I encourage people who run to come to a workshop that is for the general public, because even though you're an athlete, unless you, although some athletes have this intuitive sense about rhythm, and breathing is very rhythmical. So the Breathe Out Dynamic System helps you to coordinate breathing with activity. How many steps do you take on your out-breath? How many for the in-breath? And out-breath is longer than in-breath, ideally. But it's something you play around with. That's why Ian Jackson called it breath play, because we were encouraged to play around with the basic understanding, which is the active out-breath, passive in-breath, to play around with it. I can't tell someone how long they should blow out. You have to experience that. It all depends on what you're doing, depends on strength of your body, so many things.
But it's utterly crucial, you know, in working with a personal trainer. He often corrects my breathing. He'll say, you know, if you want to lift that weight, that very heavy weight, you got to have your breath in proper sync. You can't be pushing up on the weight while, inhaling. You know, that's the paradoxical for the body.
Yes. And so what I tell athletes is, don't try to apply this instantly to your physical activities. Learn it sitting, lying down for a week or so until your body gets it that the out-breath is where you want to be. And I relate this to my own learning of the breathe-out dynamic system in 1987. I took a week-long course with Ian Jackson at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. And I learned it, but it was a couple of weeks after I got home, after I'd been practicing it with walking every day, when one day I was out walking and I couldn't wait to finish with the in-breath and get back to my out-breath. And that's when I knew that it was in my muscles. We're teaching muscles new habits.
Like a muscle memory that where it becomes natural.
Exactly. And muscles are smart, I've discovered, but they're slow learners. They need time to figure it out. And they need our patience. You know, our mind is running at a mile a minute, and our muscles are lagging, and we just need to give them the chance to catch up. So an athlete should really learn this in a quiet place first. And athletes need quiet time, too, so it's not wasted time.
And, of course, your mentor, Ian Jackson, was actually a coach of Olympic cyclists.
That's
and
right.
Helped them enhance their performance through specialized breathing techniques. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just share with you a little anecdote that may relate to this. I recently went diving in Mexico. I was in Tulum, Mexico, and they have fabulous caves there where you can do cave diving. Mm-hmm. And I was a little apprehensive, and you know, I went to the dive shop and I said, "Look, you know, I'm a pretty experienced diver, but I don't want to go in a really daunting diving situation where I'm in a deep, dark cave with no outlet, no escape route." And they assured me. They said, "No, it's very tame. It's very easy. It's always an easy escape route." And so I proceeded to begin the dive, and then I realized that. No, this actually was, you know, they said everything's going to be fine. Well, we were diving into a deep, dark cave, and it was dark, and they gave us flashlights, and there was no light above us. We were literally in a dark tunnel illuminated with our flashlights, and it was fascinating. It was like being in underwater Carlsbad caverns. It was fascinating, I was very excited, and when you breathe normally, you're not aware of your breath, but when you breathe with a scuba gear on, you feel like... You can really feel, you see the bubbles, you hear
you
your breathing.
You can suck it up, too, if you're not careful.
Right. And you also realize that, you know, you're maybe inches away, you know, seconds away from drowning. And also, a concern of mine was I really felt like I was using up all my air in my tank, and there was a limited amount of air. And I felt like, oh, my goodness, I don't want to be running out of air during this, you know, 25, 30-minute dive. Mm-hmm. And so gradually I calmed myself. It took a while because I was excited. I was anxious. And then finally I said, focus on your breath, breathe, you know, easy, you know, take it easy.
Yeah.
But this is an example of, you know, how important breath is to athletic performance. And also, I mean, I started breathing normally, my apprehension disappeared. And there was a relationship definitely between my breathing and my level of literally, I could say panic, because what you don't want to do when you're in an underwater cave is panic. That would be a bad thing. Because then you strip up your diving apparatus and, you try and claw madly for the surface. But there is no surface because it's the top of a cave.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I think that illustrates the point a little bit.
Well, and this also leads us into the discussion about firefighters.
Yes, good, because you are the author of a poster for a scientific conference on the use of efficient breathing techniques for firefighters. Tell us about that. That's fascinating.
Exactly, yeah. Well, 20 years ago when I was so taken by the breathe-out dynamic system, using it myself and knowing that I could help people, I was stymied basically because I needed to come up with a group of people who really understood the power of breath. Because I would speak to doctors, and at the time I was an elementary school teacher. I didn't have any medical alphabet after my name. And I wasn't taken very seriously, so I was working on this, trying to figure out who would really resonate with this. And at the time I was an EMT, and I thought, firefighters. And I talked to my local volunteer company, and they gave me some ideas. And I started querying fire companies to see who would be interested in doing some research, because these folks use air tanks. And if you're panicked, as you were explaining with your diving story, if you're panicked in a fire, you can't think straight, you can't function, you can't be a good team member, and it's not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Newark Fire Department took me up on the offer.
Great.
Yeah, it was a very exciting time. And I started out with 7 firefighters. Some of them had work conflicts as time went on. I saw them for about a month. I went once a week to teach them the breathe-out dynamic system and guide them through the walking, how to coordinate with walking, and make sure that they really understood it. But we did a pre-test and we did a post-test. And the pre-test was walking, breathing oxygen from their tanks upstairs and doing a route through their firehouse. And I recorded their heart rate, pulse, we didn't do blood pressure, but basically heart rate and pulse, and the number of laps they did.
And respiratory rate, presumably, as well?
Respiratory rate and heart rate.
Okay.
Yes. And perhaps oxygen saturation, too. I can't remember the exact details, but I was measuring things. And did the same thing after the class, I mean. These were average people. Several of them were smokers. One of them had a hiatal hernia. They were all in their from mid-30s to 50, at least.
They were not Zen meditators, let's put it that way.
Exactly. They weren't athletes. They weren't connected, really, to a healthy body. What happened was, in the process of learning the breathe-out dynamic system, when they repeated the test a month later, most of them used one-third less oxygen.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And so it means that they don't need to panic. They can relax knowing that they can influence how much oxygen or air, actually, in those tanks, how much air they use. So, yes, I did present that at the American College of Chest Physicians a couple of years ago. It was the first time that I had found acceptance in the mainstream medical community for this kind of information, so it's very gratifying.
Well, it sounds like this should be part of general practice at every fire department in the country, and I hope that this has some impact in getting that mainstreamed. Certainly would be an important thing to do.
I continue to work at that, yes.
Great. Much luck in knowing how bureaucracies are, you're going to be
and
up against
ideas.
Some resistance. And new ideas.
New ideas, yeah. Yeah,
but keep plugging away, because I think that's a very, very worthwhile endeavor. Well, let's look at the implications of this breathing technique for patients who have panic attacks. Panic attacks are so prevalent. I can't tell you the percentage or number of patients that I see who from time to time or frequently have experienced panic attacks. It's devastating. They feel like they're checking out. They have feelings of dread. They have heaviness in their chest. It feels for all the world like a heart attack or a stroke for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So what about this technique for, and you have clients who have panic disorder, I presume, right?
Absolutely, yes, yes. Breathing is, we've been doing it for eons, and it's connected to our very oldest part of our brain. At the base of our skull is where the breathing center is, as you know. And it's connected to the autonomic nervous system. So the out-breath is connected to the parasympathetic nervous system. That's the nervous system that helps you to relax and come back to a comfortable middle place where you're relaxed. The sympathetic nervous system, the fight and flight part of our nervous system, gets us all revved up. So when you're driving down the highway and someone cuts you off and you suddenly suck in your breath and perhaps swear or whatever, and you're just freaked out that you almost died. And so you get this panic coming and you start sucking in air. And it triggers the sympathetic nervous system to put out all kinds of hormones that rev us up, get our heart rate going, send hormones away from our digestion, so you might feel agita in your tummy, and you're breathing fast, and you're shaking. You might even get hungry, because you've used up so much energy in this panic process. And it's because of our reliance on this in-breath. We're worry is common. Some people think they have a birthright, I think, to be worried, and that it's a loving thing to be worried about your family members. Well, really, it gets us all into trouble.
From a spiritual standpoint, it's almost, it violates one of the Ten Commandments, which is worship of idolatry, the belief that you can bow down to the graven image of some worry, spend hours a day worshiping it, and in hopes of fending off misfortune. And some people, I try to explain that to some people. Patients have a spiritual orientation. Sometimes I try that tack with them and explain it that way.
Yeah, I also say that it's really like a bill that you don't owe. It's not yours. It's usually not a worry about, often not a worry about yourself. It's a worry about somebody else. Because we tend to put other people before we think about ourselves.
So at any rate, the breathing techniques can help to stabilize and help patients overcome panic attacks and panic disorders.
Absolutely. It's an action that somebody can take to quell that tendency to start sucking in air.
Right. It's a control point in a situation that's basically an out-of-control situation.
Yeah, I find myself doing that on the highway. Everybody does, because we're all part of this culture. And it's crazy out there, but as soon as I realized I just sucked in my breath, I go immediately to my out-breath. I take my foot off the gas pedal a little, perhaps, and slow down and just wish that person well and wish myself well and continue to focus on the out-breath and overcome or override that nervous system response that might be putting hormones out. As soon as you start exhaling, you calm down and you're back in control.
What about more traditional respiratory conditions? As a respiratory therapist, if you didn't have this holistic orientation, you'd mostly be seeing patients with serious breathing disorders, patients with asthma or patients who are ex-smokers with COPD. Mm-hmm. How do you approach those patients using these techniques?
Well, I don't ask people, don't spend a lot of time with diagnosed, because every human being benefits from this. And I'll explain how someone with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease benefits from this. The diaphragm is a muscle that, when it's working at its hardest, it's supposed to be domed and high in the chest. When it's relaxed and when it flattens out and does its work, it's letting the air in. But it needs this dynamic movement from being flat when it's working hard to being relaxed and domed. When you have chronic obstructive lung disease, your lung tissue has been destroyed. Not all of it, but it's like Swiss cheese. So there are holes in these little microscopic alveoli, like grape-like structures. And the lungs lose their elasticity, so they're not opening and closing normally. And air gets stuck down in there in the bottom of the lungs. And over time, the air pressure in the lungs pushes down the diaphragm and flattens out this muscle. And so this muscle is in this flattened position that represents hard work. It can never relax and get domed to help push air out.
Because the lungs are overinflated.
Overinflated, yes, yes. When a person with COPD learns to engage their belly muscles in the out-breath process, they then start to help their diaphragm. They can help it some. They can make a big difference. you know, they're not going to, it's not going to be the same dome as when they were really healthy, but it's going to be far better than not using your belly in this process. And I've seen saturations improve. In fact, one of my favorite stories is about a woman who I had in pulmonary rehab. She was on a treadmill, she was using oxygen, and this was a woman in her 70s. I knew she loved to go into Manhattan, but she did not want to take her oxygen tank with her to Manhattan. So one day I stood next to her on the as she was walking on the treadmill, and I shut her oxygen tank off. Now, she had a pulse oximeter on her finger. And I would talk to my patients about how many steps you're taking on your out-breaths, how many for the in-breaths. And so we were having this conversation. She was definitely engaged in the breathe-out dynamic system, and her saturation stayed the same without the oxygen. She did not know this. And when she was done with her exercise, I told her what I had done, because I wanted her to know that if she truly was going to go into Manhattan or any on any trip without her oxygen, she needed to know that she could survive.
Right.
If she was focused on her breathing.
So it turned out that, I mean, the oxygen certainly, you know, had some value, but ultimately it, she developed a dependence on it, maybe a psychological dependence, which was overcome by her correct breathing techniques.
Exactly, but it really meant a continual focus. Those of us with healthy lungs don't need to, we can benefit from the continual focus. But
we can afford to breathe badly. We'll still be okay.
Yeah,
we won't be so great, but we won't check out.
right.
Okay.
Exactly.
There are various breathing schemes for asthma, too. I've heard of something called Butenko breathing and various paradigms that help asthmatics breathe better. Most of them, of course, are concentrating on that out-breath, you know, the pursed lip breathing or the breathing against some resistance to help the lungs, prevent them from constricting. Your approach is basically the same with asthma as with everything else, just getting people to concentrate on abdominal breathing and the diaphragm and relaxing?
Relaxing for the in-breath. That's the difference between pursed lip breathing and the breathe-out dynamic system. And pursed lip are encouraged to suck air in, which is totally unnecessary and a waste of energy for people who don't have any energy. But what I tell people is that, you know, in their lifetime, they have heard people talk about different breathing techniques. And what their task is to discover what works best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they should focus on. It
right.
might be the breathe-out dynamic system. It might be something else. My only problem,
it's like a tennis player. You know, it's like some are one-handed backhanders, and some are two-handed backhanders. You have to find out what works for you, and you know, there's no right way.
My concern with the Buteyko method is that it focuses on breath holding, and it's really not a lifestyle change. It's not a practice. The breathe-out dynamic system is a daily practice, whether it's in a quiet place or whether it's walking. I'm doing it right now on the telephone. You know? So that's the power of the breathe-out dynamic system, that it is something you can incorporate in almost any aspect of your life.
Right. Well, it sounds very, very exciting. And you actually made the subject of breathing, which, you know, I thought could be, you know, covered in about a minute and a half, a very compelling subject that has comprised two segments of our podcast. So thank you very much for enlightening us. And what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What are some resources that patients can, listeners can access in relationship to the breathe-out technique?
Well, they can visit my website, which is justbreatheout.com, and breathe is spelled with an E on the end, justbreatheout.com. If they like what they see there, and between now and, let's say, June of 2015, they could email me, and they could even request the PDF of my book. I send this to anybody who emails me and tells me why they're interested in learning this. This helps me so much. I've gained so much understanding about who benefits from learning this from people who write to me. And also, I'd like to know that you heard me on the Ronald Hoffman podcast.
And you also conduct trainings for health professionals as well?
Yes, indeed.
That's great.
Yes.
Well, you know,
that's a very important aspect, is that because I work at an ALS clinic. I've worked there for 13 years, and I could not continue this work for that long if I didn't have a way to give people hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the Breathe Out Dynamic System gives people hope that they have some control over their body.
And even with a very devastating neurological condition like ALS,
yes,
where sometimes patients,
yes,
end up on a respirator, this could really improve the quality of life and extend the comfort zone for a patient,
mm-hmm,
with a debilitating,
mm-hmm,
condition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, that's fabulous. Hey, really, really interesting discussion.
Thank you so much.
Betsy Thomason, thank you very much for joining us. Once again, the website, please restate it.
www.justbreatheout.com.
Thanks so much for joining us and enlightening our listeners. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.